I'm fixing a hole where the rain gets in and stops my mind from wandering where it will go. I'm filling the cracks that ran through the door and kept my mind from wandering where it will go.
June 1st marked the 40th anniversary of the release of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Rolling Stone magazine has put the album at number one on the list of the 500 greatest albums of all time. And Paul McCartney said of the album on the 20th anniversary of its release, I just listened to it and said to myself, God, I really love this album. Still today, it sounds so fresh. It sounds full of ideas. These guys knew what they were doing. They're good and they're inventive. I haven't heard anything this year that's as inventive, and I really don't expect to. It's been called the album that revolutionized rock and roll, and we're going to talk about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band this hour of our program today and ask that question. It really was a highly inventive album, and I found, I was looking through my house last night, I knew we had the CD somewhere, but of course I couldn't find the CD, but at least I found the program notes for it and the cover, which was exceptionally interesting, and learned about the story of the cover. And it's appropriate because Paul McCartney's turning 65 years old on June 18, and I'm sure that many of you will want to take on this issue. Was this one of the best albums? If you looked at the top 500 albums of the last 50 years, would this be number one? Was this an album that revolutionized rock and roll? We welcome your phone calls, and our guest is Bruce Spicer. He's the author of a number of books on the Beatles, The Beatles Records on VJ, The Beatles Story on Capitol Records, Parts 1 and 2, The Beatles on Apple Records, and The Beatles Are Coming. And our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. Hello, Bruce.
Good morning.
Hard to believe 40 years ago, huh? Ooh!
Yeah, I remember first hearing the album as way back. I was, I guess, about 12 years old at the time, and you just heard it everywhere you went. And the amazing thing about it, there were no singles released from the album, and this was at a time when AM radio was dominant, and they were playing singles, yet you still were hearing, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band with A Little Help from My Friends, Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds on AM radio, and everywhere you went. And I think what sums up the impact of it was Johnny Rivers recorded a song that November called Summer Rain, mm-hmm. and it had this line in there, and the jukebox kept on playing Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. And the irony of that was jukeboxes weren't playing it, but it was just, every time you went to a diner and the radio was on, that's what you heard. It wasn't because people were doing it that way. And, it just, like the song says, everybody kept on playing it.
Right, right. And the amazing thing, when I listened to it, which I haven't in its entirety for a long time, every single song is a strong song. They were all, quote, hits, unquote.
Yeah, I mean, the thing about it was called a concept album. But what you have to realize was that it wasn't like a rock opera like, say, Tommy by The Who, which told a story, but each song told its own story, and in that way was different. It was, Paperback Writer was a song that came out before the album, and it was a story-type song as opposed to the, She Loves You, Yeah, Yeah, Yeah type thing. Yeah, and here we had like a whole album of these type of, little stories, and that's what really made it so interesting.
Yeah, and it was sort of a transformation for them. I was interested in reading about what they were doing with this album, that we had thought about them before this as a group of, somebody called them Lovable Mop Tops, and Paul McCartney said, why don't we disguise ourselves, get an alter ego, we're fed up with who we've been, we're going to do something different here, and so the whole album was a very liberating thing for them to do and transformed their image.
Yes, and it had come at a time when they had quit touring, so they had time to concentrate on the music itself, and the clues were there for those who wanted to hear them. The album Revolver had tremendous use of the studio and all sorts of other tricks, and the last track on Revolver called Tomorrow Never Knows, and that was kind of a prophecy of, what's the next Beatles album going to be like? Well, Tomorrow Never Knows, and then all of a sudden this album comes out, and you know, not just the music, but the packaging, you know, the cover itself. Mm-hmm. The first time that song lyrics for a pop album were printed on the back. You know, all sorts of things that just had never been done before were being done for the first time. And of course, what can you say about the music? You know, the lead track, because of it being sort of a gimmicky hook to get you into the album, many people lose track of the fact that this is one of Paul's greatest rock and roll vocals.
Hmm.
You know, right up there with his performance on Long Tall Sally for just sheer rock and roll energy and a voice.
Yeah. Would you say that this, not a fair question, but Rolling Stone does this, so we'll do this here.
All right.
Is it, if you looked at the top 500 albums or the top 100 albums, they have said, at least they did 20 years ago, this was number one.
Mm-hmm. I would say that, ironically enough, this is not the Beatles' best album.
Ah.
It's their most important album.
Hmm.
Because of the effect that it had on everything that followed. You know, many people might say Revolver is a, you know, is a better album. But the thing about Sgt. Pepper was that it was the point where you could no longer say pop music shouldn't be taken seriously, and the critics began taking it seriously. And also, the Beatles were allowed to indulge and spend months in the studio, whereas it used to be, let's knock out an album quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And record companies began to realize if you let really creative artists spend time in the studio, you can get some incredible results. So many other future albums by other groups were much better because the Beatles had, you know, shattered that old, you know, you've got to go into the studio and 2 weeks' time come up with a new album. And that was good. The bad side on it was a lot of times record companies indulged in people that weren't that creative, and we wasted a lot of money on Drek. But, you know, it was so important for that reason to, you know, let, you know, four exceptional musicians and talented people with great songs to do go into a studio and try to get different sounds.
Mm-hmm. And they really went to great lengths to get those different sounds, didn't they? The instruments they brought, the unusual sounds that they were able to get from not your normal kinds of instruments.
Yeah, you would take something like, well, we're going to do a guitar, and rather than just run it through directly through an amplifier, we'll run it through a Leslie speaker, which is normally just used for, you know, an organ. You know, so we're doing things differently, little things like that. You know, we'll double track the voices and then play them slightly out of sync to get a fuller sound. You know,
mm-hmm.
we'll bring in a you know, a symphony orchestra for a day in the life because we don't know what we're going to put in these 20 bars at this point of the song and how to end the song. So let's try that. And, you know, fortunately, because of the success the Beatles had previously had, you know, EMI was willing to say, okay, fine, do it. So if the Beatles hadn't done their prior albums and sold so many copies, there's no way that a record company would have allowed them to indulge.
Right. I love this description. I don't know where I read this. Paul McCartney talking about the fact that he was speaking with some of the engineers who were talking about radio frequencies and frequency of sound, and he said he didn't know a hill of beans, and John didn't even know anything about it, but that they were talking about sounds that humans can't hear, low frequency and high frequency, and one of the engineers was talking about this dog whistle, and it's buried on the album Second Side, except I don't know where, maybe you do.
Well, yeah, that whole thing, and it's kind of a fun thing. They did a truly great album, and the album was finished, and it was like, well, what else can we do? Well, and John's thing was, well, we haven't really done anything for dogs. So if we put this high-frequency pitch, and it occurs at the very end of the album,
yeah,
on the end of side two, and then also they got this other crazy idea, when the record ends, if you don't have a tone arm that has an automatic reject, it's going to just keep going back in the inner groove, and you're going to hear and they got the idea, let's put some recording or inner gibberish there.
Yeah.
And so it sounds, you know, just nothing but gibberish. And in the United States, when Capitol got the instructions to do all that, Capitol Records just didn't get it and felt, you know, no, we don't need this high-pitched whistle, and we don't need the inner groove gibberish. So the U.S. album, when it came out, does not have that at the end of it. Now, the bad side of that is you say, well, this isn't what the Beatles intended, and I'd like to hear it. Well, the compact disc that came out, hard to believe, 21 years ago today.
Oh, my.
It's been that long since that was out on CD initially. They have added the high-pitched whistle, but they brought down the tone so human ears can hear it.
Oh.
And they also have the inner groove gibberish, which plays on. Now, I personally don't like that, and I think that when you the way the album ended to U.S. listeners was this incredible 5-minute song called "A Day in the Life" that has, that to me, sounds like the end of the world.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get this wild orchestra build up, and then this chord, you know, that lasts for about 40 to 50 seconds, and you're just blown away by that. So I really felt in the U.S. we were lucky not to have the high-pitched frequency and the particularly the gibberish. The high-pitched frequency we wouldn't have heard anyway, but the fun part about it is the guy who cut the disc and actually put that frequency in said that, you know, he brought the album home and he had, you know, playing it, and all of a sudden, you know, "A Day in the Life" ends, and all of a sudden his dog's ears perk up.
There it was, yeah. We're going to welcome phone calls. We're talking about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band 40 years ago this month. It was released, has been called the all-time greatest rock and roll album ever, or the best album ever, an album that revolutionized rock and roll. But the story of how it was made and the inventiveness of this album is... It's a story worth hearing. So we're talking about that this hour with Bruce Spizer, who's written a number of books on the Beatles, including The Beatles Records on VJ, The Beatles Story on Capitol Records Parts 1 and 2, The Beatles on Apple Records, and The Beatles Are Coming. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're in Milwaukee, it is 414-227-2050.
What would you think if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, I get by with a little help from my friend. I get high with a little help from my friend. Gonna try with a little help from my friend.
Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, released 40 years ago this month, and we're talking about the significance of the album this hour and welcoming your phone calls. Lines are open for you at 800-486-8655 or 227-2050. For those of you who are in Milwaukee, this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. From Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, released 40 years ago this month, Bruce Spizer is our guest, author of a number of books on the Beatles, and we're looking at the importance of this album. 800-486-8655, 227-2050 in Milwaukee. Philip from Milwaukee is our first caller. Hi, Philip.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how are you?
I'm all right. My question is, I was watching Christian TV, I don't recall what channel, Channel 30 or something like that, and they had listed the Beatles, I believe they listed them as the number one most satanic band. They made references to Aleister Crowley or Anton LaVey, one of those two having written the Satanic Bible. They had reference to them being on the cover of the album, and also the lady in red with the chalice on the cover is a reference to the apocalypse, and I was just curious.
This was a recent conversation? This was a recent conversation on Christian television?
Yeah, I saw it 2 months ago. I don't know if it was pre-recorded or anything or not.
Mm-hmm.
So sounds like someone had too much time on their hands.
Yeah.
There's a lot you can read into the cover, but the idea behind the cover was no satanic conspiracy. The idea was that it was going to be this band surrounded by people attending the concert, and the Beatles were asked to pick individuals that they admired or thought should be there. George Harrison picked a lot of gurus. He wanted Gandhi on the cover, and EMI's India branch said no, that would be considered an affront to Hindus, so that wasn't acceptable. John, in typical John fashion, wanted Hitler on the cover. That was obviously vetoed. But you did have W.C. Fields and, you know, Marilyn Monroe and all sorts of, you know, interesting people around them. And I think one of the more interesting ones was Mae West.
That's a great story.
Yes. Mae West was selected for the cover. And the Beatles record company said, you know, we got to get permission. We don't want to get sued.
A lot of these people are alive, yeah.
Yes. So they wrote a letter to Mae West, and she wrote back, and she said, why would I want to be associated with a Lonely Hearts Club, you know? And the four Beatles wrote her back and said, no, you don't understand, you know? And she was touched by it. She said, yeah, go ahead and use me.
Yeah, it's a great story. And Jesus, John Lennon wanted Jesus, but this album was shortly after his comment about Jesus.
Yeah, they weren't
right?
going to touch that one.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, there were a lot of fun little things they threw in it. There's a television on the cover. Why? Because John liked watching television.
Hmm.
Very simple reason. They poked fun at the Rolling Stones by having this doll wearing the show, you know, Welcome the Rolling Stones. So,
mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they had a lot of fun with it. They even included wax figures of themselves.
And there are, how did they come to some of these people? It's a really eclectic group. We got Dylan Thomas. We've got Fred Astaire. We've got Carl Jung. We've got Lenny Bruce and Mae West, as you said, just all kinds of... Were these their heroes, in a sense? They just
yeah,
came up...
people they were fascinated by, not necessarily people that they agreed with, but were fascinated by,
mm-hmm.
would be perhaps a better way of describing it.
Thanks, Philip, for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, the best album ever, the question of the hour, an album that revolutionized rock and roll. 800-486-8655. Everybody's quiet today. Where are you? I would think you'd be rip-roaring ready to talk about this. Frank from Mauston. Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Good. I had read something about the Beatles one time, and I hope your guests could comment on it, that Paul was at an airplane and was talking about the Beatles' next album.
Yeah, the story, you're right. What happened there was he was coming back from Kenya with one of their roadies, McMal Evans, and they were just kicking around ideas, and he's saying, you know, we're not going to be touring. We've got this new freedom, but everyone expects the Beatles to be something. What if we weren't the Beatles? What if we were someone else? And what he claims or they think happened, and sometimes stories sound so cute, you wonder if they're true, but maybe it was. They used to serve food on planes in those days, and like particularly on long flights,
yeah.
And they had, you know, little salt and pepper packets, you know, salt,
right.
Pepper, Sergeant Pepper. And in those days, you had all these crazy long names of bands, you know, Dr. Buzzard and the Medicine Show or whatever. And so he had, you know, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. It sounded good. It flowed out. And that's how they came up with it. The song Sgt. Pepper wasn't written till later. And even though Paul had this in the back of his mind, I don't think he ran into the studio and said, look, I've got this great idea. This is what we're going to do. You know, they just started recording songs. The first was Strawberry Fields Forever. Then they worked on, you know, When I'm 64 and Penny Lane. And as it evolved, then it was, okay, well, you know, I've got this idea for unifying the album. I've got this track, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band, and they recorded it, and it took off. But the genesis of the idea, your caller is absolutely correct, was on an airplane flight from Kenya.
Hmm.
Now, was that a real tough sell to the other band members? I think I read something, too, that they didn't like the idea of the uniforms or the premise behind it.
No, I think that at the time, I don't think it was that tough a sell.
Okay.
You know, I think that, you know, John was I'll try anything type mood. And, you know, I think that I think they all went along with it. You know, Ringo joked about the album because it was so complex, and he would come in and play his drum part, and then they would do all the overdubs that he said. What he got most out of Sergeant Pepper was learning how to play chess.
This is a great show. Thanks for having it.
Thanks for your call. Our number is 800-486-8655, 227-2050. Somebody, perhaps it was from the Rolling Stone, has said that not only is this album the Beatles' most artistically ambitious, but it is also their funniest. Do you want to respond to both of those comments?
Yeah, I think certainly it was a very ambitious thing. And George Martin, their producer, was worried that they might have been a little bit pretentious and gone over the top, you know, bringing in a symphony orchestra. And what clued him into the fact of We're Okay was that the president of Capitol Records, Alan Livingston, was in London, and he was invited to the studio to hear the tape of A Day in the Life. And he was kind of expecting, you know, the label that used to have Frank Sinatra and had, you know, Nat King Cole to sit there and say, you know, you got to be joking. We can't release this. And instead, he said Alan Livingston was just blown away by it. And he thought, well, if the president of a conservative record company can appreciate what we've done, then maybe we're okay. As far as touches of humor, you know, When I'm 64 had a lot of you know, British humor into it. You know, even the names of the kids, Vera, Chuck, and Dee, that come out. Lovely Rita, written about, you know, a meter maid. You know, Paul was fascinated by the fact that people who wrote tickets and put them on parking car windshields in the U.S. were called meter maids. He thought that was fascinating. Wrote a song about it, decided to make the character slightly a little sexy, a little sleazy, throw in some humor there. So there's some nice touches. Being for the benefit of Mr. Kite, the lyrics were taken off of a poster that John saw, a circus poster. Yet it's a very funny song in those regards. So there is a lot of humor. Good morning, certainly, with all the animals at the end. You know, the sound, the lyrics. But then not only is there humor, there's also some very touching songs. She's Leaving Home.
Oh, yes.
You know, about a runaway. Certainly a very poignant subject. A Day in the Life, certainly, I don't think anyone would call that humorous. To me, as I said, to me, it sounds like, you know, the end of the world almost. But just an incredible mixture of songs.
James from Menominee, hi.
Hi, good morning.
Hi.
I don't know, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I think that it should be acknowledged that the albums previous to Sgt. Pepper's pretty much indicated where the Beatles were going. It's my impression that they sort of took rock and roll from a teenage phenomenon and transformed it into a recognizable art form. And they did that, I would say, through, I'm talking about the American releases now, through Rubber Soul.
Yes, Rubber Soul
and
was
Revolver.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
I mean, you can see their transition and their transformation.
Absolutely, yeah. You know, in Rubber Soul, you were getting use of different instruments, you know, and different recording tricks. You had sitar on it, you know, where George bringing in an Indian instrument into Norwegian wood. And some of the lyrics, Norwegian wood was certainly not your typical boy meets girl story. It's a subtle thing of John having an affair and then, you know, the girl leaving him at the house in the morning and he, you know, lights a fire, meaning burns down the house. I mean, there were clues there. Certainly Revolver was full of them. So, but, you know, visually the Beatles still looked the same in many ways. And the first time we saw the new Beatles was with the single Strawberry Fields, Penny Lane, which was intended for this album. And if you think Sgt. Pepper's is a great album, can you imagine how much better an album it would have been had they included Penny Lane and Strawberry Fields. But, you know, when we got that single, it was, you know, what is this sound we're hearing? And then the picture of the Beatles, you know, oh, my goodness, they have mustaches. You know, their hair's longer.
Right.
So, yeah, but the transformation, as your astute listener pointed out, really did begin with Rubber Soul.
Thanks, James, very much for the call. The number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050, 414-227-2050. We're talking about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band released 40 years ago this month, and an album that many have said revolutionized rock and roll. Bruce has written a number of books on the Beatles Records on VJ, the Beatles Story on Capitol Records Parts 1 and 2, the Beatles on Apple Records, and the Beatles Are Coming. And we're having musical interludes every now and then, because how can you talk about the Beatles without hearing the Beatles? McCartney has about 10 days left of being 64. Isn't that amazing? He does present a different image of being 64 than what we hear in the song, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, the sad thing about it was, had Linda not tragically died of cancer, he would have been living the life idealized of when I'm 64 at home, you know, working on the farm with his wife. And that's a real tragic thing. And you know, about the idealized life that he had. He actually was living when he was, I guess, 60, and didn't quite make it to 64.
Yeah. And the tragedy of the Beatles as well, you know, the deaths of John Lennon, and that was a horror.
The Beatles have always been not only causing trends in society, but have also been a reflection of society and culture. And when you think about it, just about everybody knows somebody that died in a violent death of some sort, and someone who's died of cancer. And in that regard, in George's case and John's case, you know, we've all had close family or friends, you know, who have died those types of deaths. So once again, tragically, the Beatles not only influence the world around us, but absorb it and are affected by it as well.
Yeah. Darlene from Green Bay, hi.
Hi there.
Hi.
I on the 1st or 2nd of June, heard a program on NPR because that was the anniversary date of this album, and someone mentioned a writer from the New York Times or whoever saying that after his generation, the interest in the Beatles would probably die out. And I really wanted to comment, so I'm glad to hear the topic this morning, because my youngest brother is 57. He was first generation Beatle and has the original album. My son, on the other hand, was a second generation Beatle and got us completely captivated. In fact, for his 25th birthday, I bought him a cat that I named Yoko. Oh, no. And he bought a companion cat for it that he named Winston O'Boogie, because evidently John Lennon's middle name was Winston, and he recorded under that Winston O'Boogie moniker, I guess.
Yeah, he used that name on one of his albums. He would make fictitious names. Yeah.
So I just think this, it's not going to die out. I know my oldest son sang Beatles numbers to his children before they were born. Mm-hmm. They're 9 and 12 at the moment, and they know as many songs as I do, and I've seen the same with my daughter's children, so it's not going to die.
No, it won't, and the reason it won't, and people ask me that, they say, well, do you really think, you know, 40 years from now, people are going to be going, oh, this is the 80th anniversary? Yeah, I do, and the reason I say that is, you know, we still listen to Beethoven. We still listen to Mozart. The truly great music of any genre is going to rise and be remembered. And because these are well-written, classic pop tunes, well performed, well recorded. You know, people will be listening to this music down the road. I attend Beatle conventions, and, you know, there are people my age, you know, in the 50s. There are people, of course, older than me. There are people younger than me. And you see 5-year-old kids walking around wearing Beatle T-shirts, and, you know, and you have Beatle trivia contests, and you might see a 7-year-old girl, you know, knowing more Beatles trivia than I do about certain things. You know, it's just amazing. So, you know, I think that the truly great music does survive, and it will survive.
Thanks so much for the call, Darlene. Kathy from Milwaukee's next. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, good morning. What a wonderful show.
Thanks.
My comment was that with the Sgt. Pepper's album, it's one of those, I'm one of the first generations, okay?
God bless you.
Yeah, seriously. It's one of those things, and I thought it was just me, but I've talked to other people. Everybody remembers exactly where they were when they first heard it.
Oh, really? So where were you?
I was with my best friend out at her house. I was in a suburb of Chicago, and we were sitting in her bedroom with this crappy old, you know, the old with the arm radio, and we sat there absolutely silent for the whole thing with stupid grins on our face, and her name happens to be Rita.
Oh, my gosh.
Leave it to the Beatles to get a song with my name.
Oh.
She was so happy. And one of the things that as I'm listening to your show, the thing, and I'm thinking about the album, the joy that's in that album, but it's balanced because there's very poignant things in there. There's very spiritual things. I mean, George is within you, without you.
Right.
And like you said, Armageddon, end of the world. It has the whole, it's balanced, and it reflects. It's like a rainbow. Mm. It's just, even in their costumes, when you open the old album, and they're spread across there in those incredible rainbow costumes, it's just so full of joy. And anybody could see anything demonic in it. I really feel sorry for them because they're missing something so beautiful and wonderful.
Do you still listen to it a great deal?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I have all of their albums, and I still listen to that. And it's really kind of more pushed to listen to it for anniversary.
Mm-hmm.
And my kids are grown and have kids of their own, and it will go on. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Bruce?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's wonderful. I wasn't about to interrupt somebody saying so many things I'd love to hear like that. And, you know, it's exciting, you know. People were, when they first heard it, just blown away by it. The other story is that, you know, the record comes out, and 2 days later, Paul McCartney's in a club in London, and Jimi Hendrix is performing, and he opens his show with Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. You know, I mean, things like that. So everybody just jumped on it, and, you know, it is a lot of fun. We know that the Beatles catalog is in the process of being remastered, and I'm really looking forward to hearing this album when it's, you know, remastered. Mm. Eventually, they'll probably do it in 5.1 surround, and you'll have the crowd effects and everything around you. And when you get to a song like "Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite" with new technology, you'll probably, it'll be like Henry the Horse. It'll sound like he's waltzing around your stereo system.
Oh, that'll be great. Bruce Spicer is our guest, author of a number of books on the Beatles. The Beatles Are Coming, The Beatles on Apple Records, The Beatles Story on Capitol Records, Parts 1 and 2, and The Beatles Records on VJ. We're talking about Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band because the album was released 40 years ago, and also because Paul McCartney is turning 65 in 11 days. Welcome to your phone calls at 800-486-8655. If you're joining us in Milwaukee, the Milwaukee line is 414-227-2050. We have one line open now if you'd like to take it.
Picture yourself in a boat on a river with tangerine trees and marmalade skies. Somebody calls you, you answer quite slowly. A girl with kaleidoscope eyes.
You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go back to phone calls now for Bruce and let's go to Paul from Green Bay. Hi, Paul.
Hi.
Hi.
I was just wondering, with the nature of music as it's going on right now, if, you know, there will be another Beatles. I mean, it seems like music today is more of a making money sort of a thing, whereas the Beatles seem to be more of a for the music.
Yeah, I don't think there'll ever be another Beatles. It was, you know, things just came together at the right time for something like this to happen, and radio was a lot different now than then. I mean, now you could never have the type of dominance that the Beatles had on the charts because you've got radio and satellite things, and they play one type of music or another, whereas this came out during what we call Top 40, where you might hear Fats Domino followed by Frank Sinatra followed by the Rolling Stones.
That's my kind of radio station. I love it.
You know, it's creative and fun. Those days are gone, unfortunately.
Yeah.
And, you know, so I just don't think you're going to see that. Plus, you know, the amount of talent that all four of them had and just getting together. And, you know, it's a very convoluted way that they got together and how they caught on in America. So, unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to see the likes of that again. And, you know, we're just grateful that, you know, we did have a wonderful canon of music they left behind.
Don't you find it remarkable? I've always wondered how people can play music without reading or writing music, but neither Paul nor John, I don't know about Ringo and George, read or wrote music, and yet they composed all of this. It strikes me as just amazing.
Yeah, they, you know, just had a natural feel for it. And, you know, didn't have the formal training per se, but, you know, could just go there and hear something and say, well, that sounds good.
Right.
How can we use this? And they were very much influenced by American music, and then in turn, of course, influenced future American bands. So once again, the point I've always made was it's an oversimplification to say that the Beatles and Sgt. Pepper, you know, changed the Western culture and leave it at that. Western culture affected them, and in turn, they were like sponges. They absorbed things, and they interpreted it and sent it back and influenced culture, you know, that way. So,
thanks, Paul, so much for your call. We go next to Jim from Platteville. Hi, Jim.
Hey, good morning. Excellent show. How are you today?
Fine, Jim. How are you?
Good. I just wanted to expand and get your guest's feedback a little on a comment a few calls ago about the progression of the Beatles' music. I was a 20-year-old sophomore at UC Berkeley when Sgt. Pepper's rolled out on June 1st.
Oh, my.
You were truly Summer of Love.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I really was. But, I mean, there were so many things going on in the culture at that time with free speech, and free love. There was a very unpopular war in Vietnam. We had a president that was not very popular. And, you know, this album arrived at the time. And the Beatles were very interested in expanding their consciousness. And, you know, they were into transcendental meditation as well as drugs. And I'd like your guest's feedback on those two issues. And, you know, they were just sort of a catalyst for us to move to the next step, if you will. And I'm not trying to promote them or slam them for their drug use, but, you know, it was just a part of the culture at the time and certainly part of the Beatles culture.
Right.
And you only need to listen from Revolver and Rubber Soul.
Or Lucy in the Sky, which we just played, yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, realize that we are no longer teenagers holding hands in love. And as your guest just said a moment ago, they really were absorbing the culture and giving back their interpretation and having tremendous influence on my generation.
Yes.
And, on the 40th anniversary, I teach indoor cycling. I played Sgt. Pepper's. We spun to Sgt. Pepper's. And it wasn't a person in the room that was born before Sgt. Pepper's was released. So I really felt like I felt every bit of my 57 years.
Yeah. Thanks so much for calling, Jim. Bruce.
Yeah, see, well, you know, the thing about it was, in the drug thing, you know, we have to be honest about it and say that the Beatles were experimenting with drugs during this time. Paul's drug of choice was marijuana, which did get him into a bit of trouble in Japan one time. But the lyrics themselves, the funny thing about Lucy in the Sky with Diamonds is a lot of people went, oh, I get it. It stands for LSD. And John swears that wasn't the case. His son Julian had drawn a picture of one of his classmates up in the sky. Her name was Lucy, and he asked him, what's a picture of? And he said, Lucy in the sky with diamonds. And John was like that. Oh, what a great idea for a song title.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at the lyrics themselves,
right,
they are very trippy. You know, cellophane, flowers of yellow and green towering over your head. I mean, that to me sounds like, mm-hmm, you know, sounds like probably someone on an acid trip. So, mm-hmm, I mean, while the song itself doesn't stand for it, the imagery is certainly very drug-induced. One of the other funny stories is on the album cover, right above the Beatles' name in flowers, there's this plant, a set of plants, and it looks like marijuana. The funny thing about it, though, was it was not marijuana. It actually is a plant, and you can't make stuff like this up, called peperomia. And the florist brought by these plants, and, you know, and I don't know whether anybody thought, gee, it looks like marijuana. It certainly does. And Alan Livingston, who was president of Capitol, when the rumors came out, he knew it wasn't marijuana, but he said, well, who am I to stop a rumor that helps sell albums?
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
So
as if they needed help selling
marijuana, fine.
Yeah. Thanks so much for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Chris is next from Belleville. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I want to talk about the Rolling Stone ranking, and you know, I haven't seen the list, I haven't seen the top 10, but I would think that the number one ranking might go to something that had more broad appeal, say, among blacks. And it's my understanding that the Beatles appealed pretty much to a white or Anglo audience, and would just like to hear your speaker's comments about that.
I would disagree with that comment. And one of the biggest Beatle fans I know is Tony Perkins, who was Good Morning America's weatherman for many years. And Tony is a humongous Beatles fan, and the Beatles, keep in mind, this was when Top 40 radio was still around, and you had Americans. There were some stations that were primarily playing, you know, black music and listened to black audiences, but radio was not as segmented at the time. So you did have people of all races, nationalities, listening to the Beatles. And the other thing is that, and I'm blanking on the name of the rap artist, but there was a very famous rap hip-hop artist who in Rolling Stone about 10 years ago mentioned that one of the albums that influenced him more than anything else was Sgt. Pepper. Now, while I didn't hear it in his music, you know, he said himself that it was his favorite album and was a very important thing for him. So, you know, I don't think that that's certainly an accurate statement that, you know, only Anglo-American white people, or Anglo-American Saxon brother's son, as John would say in the continuing story of Bungalow Bill, listen to the Beatles. I will say, when I go to Beatle conventions, I see people of all ages, and I will say that I do see more Caucasian people than African-Americans or, you know, people of other races, but that's not entirely true. And the international appeal of the Beatles is also brought home. I was at an event recently where they had these Beatle bands coming in, Beatle tribute bands, and I thought the best band was a group from the Czech Republic. There was a group from Puerto Rico that was phenomenal, high-energy act, and a group from Japan. So, you know, you really do get, you know, this wide appeal of the music.
Mm-hmm. Thanks so much for your call. Let's go next to Mark. And we have a couple lines open. They've been crowded, if you'd like to get through. 800-486-8655. Mark from Green Lake. Hi.
Good morning. How are you?
All right. How are you?
Very well.
Good.
I really appreciate the show, and I really want to echo the timeliness factor of Sgt. Pepper's. My four-year-old, who's right in front of me, can sing Lucy in the Sky by heart. And my son has parsed out every lyric for the benefit of Mr. Kite, and just about performs it as a show tune with choreography and the whole deal. And when they heard the radio show, I pretty much got chased out of the house because they were fighting to get the CD on.
Oh, my gosh.
And it is timeless, and you're talking about different kinds of artists. I've even heard, for example, interviews with members of Metallica saying that Sgt. Pepper's and the Beatles contributed to their inspiration.
Yeah, I've always felt there are two kind of musicians today, those influenced by the Beatles and Liars.
Well put, sir. Nobody mentioned it, and it just occurred to me, the movie, The Bee Gees and Peter Frampton?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. I'm just curious if you had any commentary on that.
Best forgotten.
Best forgotten.
Nearly ruined the career of the Bee Gees, but they bounced back with disco. George Martin was involved in the project, and I'm sure he would like to forget about it as well. It just didn't work. And the crazy thing about it is when there was talk of this show that the Beatles were doing, Cirque du Soleil Love Show in Vegas, and I thought, oh, no, here we go again. But it's great. I've seen the show a couple of times, and it really is well done. So while I would say the Sgt. Pepper movie best forgotten, the Cirque du Soleil Beatles Love Show in Las Vegas is best attended. Fabulous show.
Thanks so much for the call. Let's go to Jim next. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Hi, Jim. Go ahead.
Oh, my goodness. I just had to call because I'm 64 today.
Happy birthday.
Thank you. Thank you very much. And I remember bringing this album from the Midwest down to Texas to my parents and say, finally, a rock and roll album that they will like.
Ah.
No way.
They didn't like it.
No.
Huh.
However, my kids, of course, have totally embraced it. My youngest probably can play every song they ever made on his guitar.
Hmm.
And I have only one thing else to say, and that is that there's a tribute album from Country Western called Come Together. It's all Country Western players, and it's fantastic tribute to the Beatles. So I'm sorry I don't have a question. Maybe I should just ask, where does Sgt. Pepper come from?
Well, we had mentioned earlier that supposedly Paul was the idea of having the Beatles have a new identity so they could record what they wanted. And he was on an airplane coming back from Kenya, and on the food service, whatever, there was some salt and pepper, and salt, pepper, Sgt. Pepper. And the idea that at the time you had these crazy long, names of bands. And so, that was sort of where the title came from.
And thank you so much for the call. Bruce, thank you so much for being with us. It's just been a real pleasure to talk with you and to listen to some Beatles. We're going to end with a bit of Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. Thank you. Bruce Spicer, author of The Beatles Records on VJ, The Beatles Story on Capitol Records, Part 1 and 2, The Beatles on Apple Records, and The Beatles Are Coming. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour. Thanks to John Treader for on-air production here in our studios in Milwaukee. And thank you, everybody, for all of your calls. They were wonderful. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
Sang out a tune, would you stand up and walk out on me?